Good evening.
Testing God is my title, but it should actually be testing Joe, because that's not what I'm speaking about. But it's not Joe's fault, it's my fault. I told him that. And here we go. So this is what I'm going to be speaking to you on. The two parables of the friend at midnight and the widow and the unjust judge. The second portion of our theme verse states that we are to pray without ceasing, or pray continually in other versions of the Bible. And whenever you ask anybody about this idea of praying and being persistent in our prayers, these two parables seem to get brought up quite a bit. The one in Luke 11, the friend at midnight, and the other one about the unjust judge and the widow. And sometimes they're even grouped together, making the same point that we need to be persistent in our prayer if we expect God to answer us. And so, what I want to talk to you about this evening is that I believe that idea of these parables is wrong, that I think that the two parables are not making the same point, and that they actually have completely different messages, although they are related, and that neither parable is advocating this idea of being persistent in prayer as a means of receiving our requests from God. And so I want to make this clear before I start that I'm not saying that you should not be persistent in your prayers. I'm saying that it's a biblical idea. Obviously, it's in our theme verse, and so I don't want to be misunderstood that that's what I'm preaching, that you shouldn't go to God for with your prayers. We can see many characters in the Bible who pray earnestly, but we can also see that that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a guarantee that God's going to give them or us what we're asking for. But these two parables that we're going to go over tonight are about not just any prayers. They're about prayers regarding the things that God has promised to us, the things that He will say yes to. And the lessons in them help us to understand who God is. And I think that's what Jesus was trying to get across. Who is my Father? I want you to know what His character is. Why should we believe in what He promised us? These parables were told to His disciples to encourage them, to encourage us, to strengthen our faith, and to maintain any confidence that we have that God is real. When everything around us, everything we see in the world says that He must not exist. And so it's not necessarily telling us, and I don't think this is what Jesus was trying to get across, that we're supposed to be persistent, but it's about why we should be persistent. So this first one that I want to go over is the parable of the friend coming at midnight, found in Luke chapter 11. And at first, when you're reading this, the whole point seems pretty obvious about what's going on. There's a man inside who at first refuses, and finally he eventually responds to the persistent plea of his friend. And so that's how our relationship is with God, that if we are like this and we're persistent, that he'll answer us. And I don't believe that that was what the focus was that Jesus had in mind. So what did he have in mind? One of the first things that I notice, and possibly because of the title that we find in all the Bibles, is the outrageous time that this friend comes to ask of his friend. All the reading that I've done on this, it's quite interesting looking at Jewish culture, because that may not have been the first thing that popped out to the people that Jesus was speaking this parable to. And what I read was that they would have understood the importance, actually, of being a good host. They would have related to that point. For a host to not be able to offer a meal to his guest could be a shameful thing. And not only that, the writings that I saw said that if a village could not help in this situation, it would have been a shame for the entire village. And so amongst the people that Jesus was telling this to, this would have been seen as a very important request, and it wouldn't have been seen as an outrageous time to come. It would have been a reasonable thing to do. So that's important for us to understand, that even though this, upon first reading for us, it seems to be ridiculous that come at this time, that may not have been what popped out. Jesus tells this parable right after he gets done telling them, teaching his disciples the Lord's Prayer, how to pray. And there's an exhortation already in just the Lord's Prayer by itself, but I only bring it up because it's important to note what he teaches them to ask for within it. He's telling them to ask for God's name to be hallowed, for his kingdom to come, for their daily bread, for their sins to be forgiven, for them to not be led into temptation. These are all things that God promised that he would do, that he would do for them if they cried out. But they are bold things to ask for. What makes us think, or anybody think, that you have any right to ask for these things? They're such bold things to ask for. And yet, at the end of the parable, he says to them, ask, and it will be given to you. And sandwiched in between, he is reassuring them with this story, that for these requests, these ones here, not just any, but for these, the things that he has promised, he will say yes. And so I had Brother Paul read from the New American Standard Version, which I had up there. And I had him read there for a specific reason. And that is because there's nothing wrong with the New American Standard Bible. If you have it, that's great. But there's a lot of flaws in this translation with this particular parable. And it really, I want to go over some of them because I really think that by reading this, it gives you the idea that we should be persistent in our prayer. And I think it's actually confusing the matter on what Jesus was really trying to get across. And so it starts off and it says, then he said to them, suppose one of you has a friend. And when you say suppose, it's like we all have a friend like this, and we know of a friend like this, and now the theme of it is all changed because it's like now here's a story about what to do if you have a friend like this. But I don't think that's what Jesus was trying to say at all. As a matter of fact, it didn't go along with anything that he had said in any of his other parables or any of the other times that he spoke. Most of the time, it should have been, who among you, not suppose one of you, who among you, because that is a rhetorical question. Every time Jesus asked this, it was a rhetorical question that was supposed to give a negative reply. Jesus uses this style multiple times, and I've listed a couple of them here in Luke 17. But who among you, having a slave plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the field, come immediately and sit down? Or in Luke 14, for who among you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost? What father among you, what we just read, if his son asks for a fish, will instead give him a serpent? And the implied answer is that no one among you will say this to a slave, that no one among you does not sit down and calculate the cost before you build a tower. And that there's no father there that will give a serpent instead of fish. And so that is how it should be translated. This isn't we are recognizing that we do have a friend like this. The point of this is, can you imagine such a thing? No, I can't. I can't imagine such a thing. Who among you has a friend when you are in need like this that would say, don't bother me? And the answer is, no one. No one has a friend like that. And the point that he makes even further, that This guy says, my children are in bed with me. I can't get up and give you anything. Would have been absolutely ridiculous and unheard of in their culture for somebody to act like this. And so it's important to notice what he does not say. He doesn't say, if you ask your friend and he says no, then keep asking him because eventually he's going to say yes. He's just saying that if you ask in these circumstances, a friend will say yes to you. There's nothing that Jesus says that gives this idea of persistence in the sense that you should just keep asking again and again. Just that culturally, this would be the right thing to do. This is a right request to make. Even at this ridiculous time, they would have identified with the man coming to make this request. And to make it clear to them why their friend would say yes, because I think he could have just stopped there, but he wants to make it clear to everyone why God would say yes, or why their friends would say yes, because he wants us to know why God would say yes. And so he says, I tell you, even though he will not get up and give him anything because he is his friend, yet because of his persistence, he will get up and give him as much as he needs. And that brings us to our second translation issue that I think confuses the true meaning. Even though is not the right translation here. Because even though suggests that friendship in this case is not a good enough reason for this friend to respond. I think it should be even if. He's not saying that he would definitely respond. He is saying that he would definitely respond because of friendship. Jesus is not telling a story about a guy that is unwilling to do this on the basis of friendship, but was finally pestered into doing it. I mean, this is a friend here that we're talking about, and you have to put yourself, how would you act? Friendship would most certainly be enough, is what he's saying. But even if it were not enough, there's something else. This persistence. And I had this word here, and I couldn't find a pronunciation of it. Or I shouldn't say I couldn't find it. I did find one. It took me a really long time to find it. So I'm just going to play it so that you know how it's supposed to be pronounced. How it should sound is an idea. There's two different translations that we see in the scriptures of this word meaning this anideia. And you can find it in various versions, depending on what Bible you have. But some versions say that it's shamelessness, and some say persistence. Paul read the New American Standard, which had persistence in it. And one gives off a negative quality, and one shows us a positive tone. When we look at the word, this word, anideia, in other verses, it's clear that it means shameless, impudent, stern, fierce, or harsh. It's never persistent. It's always used in a negative way. And all the reading that I did in the first century, there is no evidence that the word would have been understood as importunity or persistence. And that's important because shamelessness, the way it should be translated, now that it's associated with this parable, there's problems that arise. One of them is, does the person then coming act shamelessly? Is Jesus saying that we act shamelessly in our request to God? So it's interesting because gradually this word was switched from this negative word meaning shamelessness to this positive one, persistence, because they said that there's verses like verse 9, ask and it will be given to you, seek and you will find, knock and it will be opened to you immediately after. And so all of these give off the idea of positive nature, and there's problems with this shamelessness version. But persistence is not the word used here. The parable doesn't bring out a theme of persistence at all, unless we see that we're supposed to be persistent until God finally answers us with justice. It's not about being persistent until he changes his mind. And after he says no, we keep going, which is what this parable of the friend coming at midnight seems to teach. You know, the sleeper on the inside doesn't want to help, but because he's been annoyed so much because the guy's banging on the door, he eventually decides to help his friend. And I don't think that's what it should have been. So how are we to interpret this? Well, this is how I interpret it. I still think that it is shameless, that it's the negative word that Jesus is wanting to use here. But somehow, when he uses it, it comes across with a positive tone as well. And this is how I understand it. That this guy is coming to his friend at such a ridiculous time. What a shameful thing to do. And yet he's saying, it's the right thing to do. That's what you should be doing in this culture. What if a friend came to you? And I think about that. Like we're not talking about just anybody here, a stranger coming up to your door. What if a friend came and knocked at your door? How would you respond? It's not a normal thing that a friend would come. At least I don't have friends like this. Maybe you do. That come and knock on your door at midnight asking for help. What a shameful thing to do for the one coming. Yet, me being inside, I would respond because, first, I'm a friend. That's why I would respond. And I would because it's not normal. Why are they coming at this weird time? Such a bold thing to come and ask me. Something must be up. They must have a need. Imagine if you said no to your friend and others found out you didn't help. Hey, do you know so-and-so came up to Alan's door and he said no and he told him to get out of there? And everybody would just say to me, oh, that Alan, he's a real jerk. He's not much of a friend. And I'd be shamed for doing such a thing. So the man inside would do it first because of friendship. And if that weren't enough, the fact that the request is being made in such a shameful, bold manner, he would as well. And that's how I understand it. It's still being negative, but in a positive way. That it's the right thing to do. And so what's the point? What's the point of all this? Jesus showed them this, or he told them this parable, right after the Lord's Prayer. An amazing prayer that we shamelessly ask for bold things in. Things that we have no right to ask for. Forgiveness, his kingdom, daily bread. We don't deserve any of them. What makes you think that you have a right to ask? But you have to ask. You have to. It's a need that you have. And asking with that in mind is like going to your friend at midnight to ask for help. How embarrassing. How shameless. But I can't do anything about it because I need the help. I have to do it. What a bold thing to do, but what a right thing to do, Jesus is saying. Your prayers to God for these things will be answered because God is like a friend to you. He's not a stranger. It's not like going up to a stranger's door here and just being, oh man, I can't do this. But that's how we feel sometimes. And Jesus is saying, no, it's not like that. It's like going to a friend that would respond. Everybody look at your friend next to you. They'd respond. And look how evil they are. How much more would your Heavenly Father, your friend, respond to you? And even if friendship were not enough for him, he would still respond as to not bring shame on his name, on his reputation. He has made a promise to you. If he didn't respond, then his name would be mocked through the world. And we see that happen all the time. We see that in the news whenever bad things happen. God's name is mocked because, hey, he didn't respond. But having his name be hallowed through the earth is very important to him. He expresses that multiple times throughout his word. And he will respond to your great need because you have the faith to do it at all. So, is this parable about prayer?
Sure.
He spoke it right after the Lord's Prayer, but was that the main point that he wanted to get across? If you have a friend like this willing to help you, if you have the faith to come to him, then in verse 9 through 10 there, it says, "Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. For if everyone who has the faith to ask and believes the one inside is his friend, for everyone who looks for that house at all when they are in need," you know, because it's easier to not go out and look for that house. "For everyone who has the boldness, the shamelessness to go and knock on that door, knowing that you have no other choice, you are being encouraged in this story because it's the right thing to do. The things that God has promised to you, you will receive, you will find, and the door will be open to you," is what it's saying. The next parable is about the widow and the unjust judge, and I put it up here on the screen. This is another parable having to do with prayer and the idea of persistence in prayer. The widow in the story keeps asking a judge for justice, and in spite of the fact that she keeps getting turned away, she keeps coming back again and again. So the common interpretation of this is that we're supposed to pray and pray and never give up praying about our needs and afflictions and worries, etc. That if we just persevere in asking, that God will eventually answer us. And I think, as we discussed in the first parable, I don't think this is the main point that Jesus was trying to get across here. And again, I'm not saying, I'm saying be persistent in your prayers. That's a biblical thing to do. But is that what Jesus was teaching his disciples in this case here? How are we to interpret this parable? Jesus is saying that the story is somehow like each of your lives. It's like something that we all share. So is it then about each of your own personal prayers for justice? Or is it something else? And so I want to look at a couple things that we should know but have importance on how we understand this. And that the first one is about widows. That God, he upheld widows, and he cared for them deeply. I've listed some verses here that talk about basically God being a defender of widows, and he took it very seriously that his people understood this message as well. A widow was the sort of person that a godly judge would have known to protect. And judges were supposed to follow this act. They were supposed to act the same way as Jesus. They were supposed to uphold these things. In 2 Chronicles here, it says how they were representatives of justice for God on earth. But this widow was in need of protection, and unfortunately she had to deal with a judge that was not this way. He didn't act like this. He didn't care about her situation. And so that's just some quick background on who we're talking about here. The context of Jesus telling this parable is very important, I think. My NIV version says, "Then Jesus told his disciples a parable." I know in the Diaglot it never says that he said it to his disciples. He said it to them, it says. And some commentators, and the reason why I probably have this in my NIV is because he was just addressing them in the previous chapter, in Luke 17. And so, if you turn there, or you can just look up here, Jesus, in 17 verse 20, was asked by Pharisees about when God's kingdom would come. And he tells them his answer. Then in verse 22, he says this, "And then he said to his disciples, 'The time is coming when you will long to see one of the days of the Son of Man, but you will not see it.'" Jesus tells them this statement about his coming and how they will long for it, and then he tells this parable. And then at the end of the parable, in verse 8, is something that I always thought was weird and didn't fit. He asks this question, "I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" So before he tells this parable, and after he tells this parable, he's talking about his coming here, his coming back to the earth. So this is the context that he's telling this story in. It's about him coming back to the earth. It's going to be a long time. And then it says to pray and never give up. And so the question here is in verse 8, will he find this faith, that kind of faith, when he comes back? So I can see, we can see that this is not so much about persistence in prayer or prayer in general, that they should pray about whatever issue until they get their answer, to be persistent at it. This is about faith. They could lose it. Don't give up. Why would they give up? Why would they give up? Well, let's look at some different elements of the story to help us understand why Jesus would have told them this and asked them this question at all. In verse 5, he talks about being worn out by this widow. There's so many versions of this this word I've listed up here. I don't have the pronunciation for that one. Sorry. But there's so many different ones. There's wear me out, beat me down, that she would embarrass me, that she would completely harass me. I even saw one version called the Amplified Bible, which is really amplified. And it translated as that she would rail on me or assault me or strangle me. Wow. The Greek word here actually means to blacken the eye, to strike under the eye. And so we're kind of left here how to interpret this, what's going on. And so one way to interpret this is that the widow will actually punch the eye or punch the judge in the face. And I don't think that's how it's supposed to be, because, I mean, what's the characteristics of a widow is not to go around punching people. The second one was that the widow will completely annoy the judge. And the third is that the widow will shame the judge or his reputation. I think it's a combination of the last two. I think this is important because understanding why this judge takes action helps us to see what is so encouraging about this story. That Jesus wanted the disciples and us to compare this judge to his Father, the true and righteous judge. Another thing to consider about this parable is this idea of patience. This phrase that is found in verse 7, "And will not God bring about justice for his chosen one who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off?" And there's tons of versions. "Though he bear along with them, will he delay long over him?" It doesn't really matter overall, other than to point out that Jesus is asking a question that's supposed to bring a negative answer. Again, will God do this? No. Will he wait patiently concerning his chosen ones? No. No, he won't. But that was the experience of the widow. The judge refused her answer, and he kept putting her off. And she was thinking this question. She was thinking that question. And Jesus is saying that you will think that question too. You'll have that same question run through your mind. Why would that question run through their minds? We just read, you will long to see one, just one of the days, but you won't see it. He knew what would happen to his disciples, and I think he knows what goes on in our minds. And not only that, but he says, this is a strange thing to think about, he says that the answer from God will be quick. That God will answer or bring justice quickly. I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. But this is a story about how an answer does not come quickly. There's no answer for some time, it says. The widow keeps getting put off. She asks, but the lack of anything happening here gives the perception that the answer has got to be no. So isn't it a bit much for Jesus to say quickly here that the answer of justice is going to come quickly? How is our situation any different here? Because we ask all the time. We ask. I ask with my kids all the time for His kingdom to come, and I'm sure you do too. And I don't see any kingdom here. There's nothing happening. Maybe He's speaking about the suddenness. You know, He talks about in Luke chapter 17, His coming will be like lightning, like the flood, like what happened with Sodom and Gomorrah. Or maybe quickly is okay, as long as we understand that it doesn't mean immediately. That's not what He's saying here. And I think a verse here to look at is in Habakkuk 2:3, which talks about how something can take a while, but it's not delayed. For the vision is yet for the appointed time. It hastens toward the goal, and it will not fail. Though it tarries, wait for it, for it will come. It will not delay. And so at first you think, well, tarry, delay, what's the difference? It's the same thing to me. But I think here, God is making a distinction that it's not delayed. To you, it might be. But to Him, there's nothing that's keeping it. There's nothing blocking its path from coming. And Jesus is saying the same thing. He's given the same message. There's nothing blocking my Father's kingdom from coming. He knows this already. And He's teaching this to His disciples. The Lord is not slow in keeping His promises. Some understand slowness. So Jesus can tell them a story about having to wait and wait and wonder if an answer will ever come at all. Yes, it will come, is what He's saying. It will come and it'll be at the right time. Don't worry. And what will come? Jesus will come. God's justice will come. The earth will be cleaned up. That's what we're praying for. And all the wrongs in the world are going to be righted. This widow had a great need for justice. But there wasn't anybody else that she could turn to except this guy, this judge, who didn't care for her or anyone. He didn't even care for God, and he put her off repeatedly. So what should she do? Well, she could give up. She could lose heart. She could just walk away and not try anymore. But why should she, though? Why should she give up? If she does, she won't get her answer. She won't get justice. So she keeps trying and finally does get what she needs. Why? Why does she get what she needs? Because this judge had a change of heart? Because he became a good guy here? Because he cared about his reputation? No. He didn't care. He helped her because he found her irritating. And he didn't want to deal with the headache that she was causing in his life. There was no change in this man. He doesn't care about what anyone thinks, it says. And as a matter of fact, he agrees with it. And he says, yeah, I'm this way. He doesn't care about his reputation or his good name. He does it out of pure convenience. But the point is that he gave her an answer. Even he did. This horrible guy, this unjust guy, gave her an answer. And that's the point. How much more would your heavenly Father, your righteous judge, answer you? How much more would a God answer you that calls you His chosen ones, that calls you His elect, that thinks of you that way, and not thinks that you're annoying to Him? She was wise to come back. And Jesus is saying, you need to have that same wisdom. You need to have this attitude to just keep coming back. This parable is about waiting in faith in an effective way. This is about having faith in what God has promised. He will respond even though it seems like it's pointless to keep asking for it. When there's so much evil in the world and it could just end if He just send His Son back, how unjust is that? This is about prayers concerning the things God will say yes to. And He's asking you to continually keep asking for it. A time is coming when you will long to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and you will not see it. Here is a parable to have faith in His coming and to never give up. And the question is, will He find that faith in you at His return? So, what are the parables telling us? Are they telling us to be persistent? Maybe. Or maybe it's something else. Maybe it's something like, for all that God has promised to you and I, the appropriate and absolutely necessary response would be for you to have faith. God's people should ask for the promised blessings with full confidence that the answer will be yes. He's not like a stranger that you go up to his house and you knock on the door at night and you're just like, oh man, I can't believe I'm doing this and asking for help. He's your friend, and he'll respond to you because you have a great need. And so he's saying, go up, knock on that door, don't be afraid. There's no question of if it be your will. God has already made it clear that these things are his will. Both the parable of the friend at midnight and the parable of the unjust judge tell us that God will certainly and without fail say yes when we ask him to fulfill the promises that he has made for us. He will certainly say yes. Even if we feel presumptuous and unworthy, he will say yes. Even if that yes takes a very long time in coming. One of the things that our brother Les Wilson said in his prayer last night, and I don't know if anybody caught it, and I don't mean to point you out, but it stuck with me. He said that in his prayer, even if we die, we know that these young ones here will take our spot. And that stuck with me, because that's the kind of faith that we need to have. Because the reality of the matter is that most of us in here probably could die before he comes back, before we get an answer. That's the reality. You could die. Will you have the faith to keep going through your life? There's so many people that have come before us and died and had this faith to in God. It's amazing to think about. And the answer never came for them. But he's saying, you know what? It will come. Don't worry about it. Keep asking. And the question is, however, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? Continuing in prayer, in the sense that Jesus means, is continuing in your faith.